seated. Good afternoon. We want to welcome you all to our first day of oral argument for the September 2014, June 15 term. And our case is 11AP 1803 CR, State versus General Grant Wilson. Arguing on behalf of the state will be Assistant Attorney General Marguerite M. Moeller, and she will have 25 minutes if she wishes to use the 25 minutes. And arguing on behalf of the defendant will be Anne Broman Kearney, and she will have 30 minutes, and then Ms. Moeller will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Ms. Assistant Attorney General, if you would proceed, please.
Thank you, Your Honor, members of the court. May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Marguerite Moeller, representing the petitioner, State of Wisconsin. This matter is here on the state's petition to review a decision of the Court of Appeals for District 1, summarily reversing General Grant Wilson's convictions for first-degree intentional homicide and attempted first-degree intentional homicide. The two issues presented by the state are closely intertwined. First, did the trial court err when it barred Wilson from presenting evidence showing that Willie Friend, who was the victim of the attempted homicide charge, had slapped and threatened the homicide victim, Eva Merrick, 2 weeks before she was shot to death? And second, if the trial court erred in excluding this evidence, was that error harmless beyond a reasonable doubt so that Wilson's conviction should nevertheless stand? The Court of Appeals held that under State versus Denny, Wilson should have been allowed to present the testimony from Mary Lee Larson and Barbara Lang, showing that approximately 2 weeks before Eva was murdered, Willie Friend had said that he had to, quote, keep Eva in check, unquote, and that if she, quote, wouldn't be in check, unquote, he would kill her. Larson would also have testified that in the same time frame, while she and others were present in a motel room along with Willie Friend and Eva Merrick, Willie Friend was slapping Eva right in front of them.
So I'd like to ask you a question about the first, the statement about keeping in check. Is that related to the state's concession as to motive? I guess I'm curious as to know.
Yes, it is related to it. What I had argued in the Court of Appeals was that arguably there was enough for motive because the testimony was rather ambiguous about what was meant by keeping her in check. And
right.
So it.
And in your reply brief, you kind of, arguably, you say in the first, in the brief in chief, and then my recollection now is in the reply brief, you actually kind of come out swinging on motive. Is that not?
I don't recall right. Doing that so much. I think the state believed that the evidence was so lacking on opportunity that is where we placed the emphasis, and that is also what the prosecutor did at trial, argued to the trial court that maybe they showed direct connection and motive. And again, the motive was rather amorphous, that she apparently didn't keep in check, but whatever keep in check meant, obeying him, not going out with other men,
whatever,
we don't know what it means.
I agree, but whatever it means, there's a link there that I can't find in the record, which is that there was some indicia that it was his opinion, in his estimation, she failed to do, what he had ordered her to do in regard to whatever keep in check means.
I think that's a very good point. And that is why we couched it in terms of saying arguably, because it just seems so much stronger to point out that there was no opportunity established that I did not go into that. But it is amorphous. I mean to say that I'm slapping you, and I'm going to kill you if you don't keep in check. We don't know what that means. And part of the problem here was that Willie Friend, if you read his testimony, talked in different colloquialisms that made it very difficult to know what he was really saying. For example, he talked about the shooter coming out of his car with his arm in a sling. Normally, you'd think that meant that he had some kind of a device, like you had a broken arm. It's not what he meant. He meant that it was down in a certain way next to his body. So rather than explore this, the state just said arguably there was motive.
I didn't want to sidetrack you from, but that answers that.
I want to sidetrack you a little bit. Are you conceding or are you not conceding motive and direct connection? I'm hearing you say today those aren't your strongest arguments, so you're not arguing them, but you're not necessarily conceding them. When I read your brief, I thought those were concessions. Mm-hmm. Which is it?
I would say that, well, definitely for direct connection, we're making the concession that there's a direct connection because he's there at the scene of the crime. And with regard to motive, I would regard it as saying we're not arguing it, so you can take it as conceded. I'm not making an explicit concession, but as the state is well aware, if you don't argue a point, it can be taken as conceded. So in that sense, yes.
On the other hand, we don't have to accept this concession, do we?
That's exactly correct. The court never has to accept a concession made by any of the parties.
And when you say you're conceding it, it means really you're not arguing.
Correct.
And you're, for purposes of argument, counsel always has to pick what they're going to argue and what they're not going to argue and what they're going to emphasize. Your emphasis is not on motive.
Right. Our emphasis is not on that prong of the Denny test. Our emphasis is on the opportunity prong. And
you're not trying to change the test, as I understand.
The state is not asking the court to deviate from the Denny test. We are asking the court to find that under the test, Mr. Wilson did not show that there was a legitimate tendency that Willie Friend was responsible for Eva Merrick's murder, either as the direct shooter or as someone who set her up so that she could be ambushed by two unknown and, to this day, unnamed gunmen.
So in effect, if I understand it, you're objecting to the Court of Appeals' application of the test.
That's
to
correct.
These facts.
That is correct. We're objecting to the court's application of the test, and we're also saying that even if the court was correct in the first instance in saying that the trial court should have allowed Wilson to put on the testimony of Larson and Lange, it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt for a variety of reasons.
Okay, but I just want to get back that this is an application. And so you think that they didn't apply the test properly. Is this a question of law for this court, the application? And would you say this is an application to undisputed facts as of this time?
I would say that if you were arguing, apart from the constitutional issue, was there an error in keeping out Denny evidence, the test is usually an erroneous exercise of the court's discretion. But because this has been framed in terms of a violation of the constitutional right to present a defense, then it becomes a standard of de novo review.
And that this is the de novo review issue.
That's correct. And I believe even under the de novo review, in a footnote in my opponent's brief, she cites, I don't recall, St. George perhaps, saying that even when there's de novo review, the court does give some consideration to the reasoning that the trial court gave, but it's still de novo.
If we're here just discussing the application and no new rule of law, and I don't know quite how to frame this. I mean,
what are we doing here?
Well, that was the rest of my sentence, but I wanted to be a little more respectful than that. So is there any rule of law new rule of law that you are advancing in this review?
I think it's not so much a new rule of law, but rather a clarification of what does opportunity really mean when you're talking about the Denny test. Because I think, like my opponent is saying, in this case, opportunity is really can't be separated from direct connection. And I don't agree with that. I think that there's sometimes a tendency of courts to look at one or two of the Denny factors, and because the court finds so much of a strong showing on one or two factors, that the court kind of gives the defendant a free ride on the third one. And I think one of the examples I gave in my brief is illustrative, and I can give another one. You can have somebody be present at the scene of a crime, and you can have that person have a very personal motive for injuring or killing the victim, but yet for physical reasons, the person doesn't have the opportunity to do so. The example I gave was physical disability. Somebody who, say, is an amputee cannot pull the trigger of a gun. Person is killed by gunfire. Was there direct connection? Sure. Was there motive? Sure. There's evidence showing that this person just despised the victim. But that isn't enough. Same thing would hold true if you had a situation where you had a political rally, and the speaker at the rally was shot and killed, defendant is charged with it. He said, oh, no, I have a third person who did this, somebody who was sending death threats to the speaker, and somebody who was actually spotted at the very rally where the victim was killed. But it turns out that the victim was killed by a shot to the back of the head, and surveillance tapes show that this third person was always way in front of the victim, could not possibly have committed the crime, a physical impossibility. I would argue in those cases, you've got direct connection, you've got motive, but you do not have opportunity. And that opportunity has to mean really something along the lines of the capacity to have committed the crime that the defendant is charged with.
What are the facts here that you're pointing to claim lack of opportunity?
Largely, the ballistics testimony. The ballistics testimony and evidence showed that Eva Merrick was killed by two different weapons, a .44 Magnum revolver that was the first of the two weapons that was used to shoot two bullets into her, another bullet into the passenger side door, the front passenger side door of the car in which she had been the driver and Willie Friend had been the passenger, and at least one, if not two more, bullets that were portions of which were found in the sidewalk area along the path Willie Friend had fled from the scene. And in connection with this, I want to point out something before I forget, that I didn't catch this when I was doing my reply brief, but there's a misstatement on page 40 of Wilson's brief where he says that smaller caliber bullets were found in the lower half of the passenger door of Ms. Merrick's car. That is incorrect. State's Exhibit 16 consisted of copper fragments that Detective Dennis Kuchenreuther testified he had removed from the inside of the front passenger door of the victim's car. And that testimony is at Record 51, pages 149 to 150. When the state's firearms expert, Monty Lutz, testified, the prosecutor asked Lutz to examine Exhibit 16, the same exhibit that the detective had referenced, which Lutz had not examined prior to trial. So the very first time the state's firearms expert is given a chance to look at Exhibit 16 is during his testimony. Lutz identified this exhibit as containing two pieces of copper jacketing material. He said that one appeared to be a deformed portion of the base of a bullet, and the other was a side of the jacketing material of the same projectile. According to Lutz, both pieces were consistent with a .44 caliber Magnum bullet, not the smaller caliber, 25 caliber bullets that were fired into Eva Merrick after she was already shot by a 44 Magnum. And I think it's important to keep those straight. And I concede that I have a hard time sometimes keeping all these different calibers straight. But I think it's important because the state has argued that the ballistics evidence was consistent with Willie Friend's testimony and with an eyewitness's testimony that the first bullets that were fired were very loud and came from a larger caliber gun. And then after those were fired, a smaller caliber gun, and it turned out to be a 25 caliber, was then pumped, bullets from that gun were then pumped into Eva Merrick. At that time, Willie Friend was no longer on the scene. And when the first bullets were being fired, he testified he was crouching down behind the open passenger door when the large caliber weapon was being fired. And the ballistics evidence confirms this because it was copper jacket material from the 44, not the 22, that was found lodged in the passenger door, and Detective Puchenreuther testified that the trajectory of the bullets, they were higher on the entrance from inside, lower on the outside, was consistent with somebody who's hiding, crouching down behind a door, and whoever was shooting was pointing it that way. So I think it's important to keep that straight.
Is it just ballistics testimony and evidence that you're relying on in terms of lack of opportunity? Or is there something else?
Ballistics is the main one, but there's other testimony that Willie Friend had his hands swabbed right after the event, didn't show that he had any, I guess they didn't say specifically, but there was no indication that he had fired a weapon, even though he was swabbed right away, as were his brothers and other people who were found near the scene of the shooting. With respect to opportunity, though, I think it's also significant that trial counsel Peter Kovac admitted repeatedly during his closing argument that the defense theory was not that Willie Friend shot Eva Merrick. He said this probably 8 different times during his closing argument. Willie did not shoot Eva. Rather, he got her to be at a location where 2 gunmen who Willie was acting in concert with were able to shoot her. And the defense never really addresses this concession other than to say that they did not have to prove, in order to show opportunity under Denny, exactly in what capacity Willie Friend was involved in the murder. And I think that when you've got physical evidence, as Judge Mannion pointed out, that contradicts the theory that this person could have personally shot the victim, and you've got a concession, I think you then look at the other theory of opportunity, which is that Willie Friend supposedly planned this by luring Eva Merrick there. And what kind of evidence was there of any type of opportunity? There really wasn't. It was conjecture. It was speculation that this could have happened. And my opponent says that you have to, under Denny, have to show a preponderance of the evidence, those 3 factors, direct connection, motive, and opportunity. But I don't see how there was any evidence that there were 2 unknown gunmen who just happened to have access to the same kind of distinctive car that General Grant Wilson was admittedly driving in the same area and on the same roads as Willie and Eva Merrick that night, how he was able to get somebody on very short notice to not only assist by killing her, but also that they happened to have the same car, so that it was so convenient that General Grant Wilson could be framed. And interestingly, there's a motion that appears in the record that was filed by Peter Kovac back in May of 1996, so it's 3 years after Wilson was convicted. And in that motion, Kovac argued that Wilson should get a new trial based on newly discovered evidence, claiming that there was an unnamed person who will testify that there were two gunmen seen that night. Mr. Kovach never mentioned who the unnamed witness was, and the motion was either withdrawn or denied. But the point is that here we are years after. There has never been any evidence, simply speculation, on the part of the defense that this could have happened, that it was possible for him to get two people to come by at the moment he had Eva talking to him in the car, and at that point to kill her, and they just happened to have the same kind of car Wilson was admittedly driving that night and admittedly was seen by Willie Friend, because Willie Friend's testimony was corroborated by Wilson himself and by Roseanne Potricus, who was accompanying Wilson. And the locations where Wilson's car was seen on 5th and Center what corresponded to his testimony that he and Roseanne Potricus were at a bar called Throttle Twisters, and Wilson admitted he knew where Willie Friend's mother lived, and Willie Friend and Eva were sitting outside his mother's house eating chicken when Willie Friend testified that Wilson's car drove by, not just once, but twice. So I think all of that goes to not just opportunity, though, but also to the second issue, which I'd like to get into briefly, which is harmless error. That even if this court were to find
to that, counsel, the amicus brief, and I think also in the defendant's brief, but the amicus brief stresses, hey, you know, probably the United States courts, including Wisconsin, do good jobs of convicting the guilty and acquitting if there isn't proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But mistakes, in quotes, are made. And so what kind of approach should you take when there's a request or motion that the defense wasn't fully able to explain a defense. And so do you look at that askance because the scene is really almost perfect, or do you look at it and say, we better be more careful? That's my first part of my question. My second part of the question is both the defendant's brief and the amicus brief talk about the Holmes case. And I may have missed it, but when I checked your table of contents, I didn't see you talk about the Holmes case.
Correct. The amicus brief, which really stressed it, was filed after all the briefing was done. And I think to respond to their allegation that this case is controlled.
Counsel, Ms. Kearney's brief does refer to the Holmes case, and that was filed before your reply.
Correct, and I do not recall right now specifically if she said that Holmes controlled, but I think Holmes is very distinguishable from our case because there you had a rule that was created by the Supreme Court of South Carolina where they applied their version of the Denny test, and my understanding is that their test is very similar, but they applied it to say that if there was strong forensic evidence, that then the defendant just could not put on evidence of third-party perpetrator testimony or evidence. And it's very distinguishable because in Holmes, what the defense was trying to show was that the forensic evidence had been contaminated and that it had been planted by the police to make it look as if Holmes had committed the crime. And the state is not advocating for a rule that whenever you have strong forensic evidence, the defendant simply cannot put on testimony of a third-party perpetrator. We're saying that looking at the evidence in this particular case, it prevented Wilson from showing that Wilson had an opportunity to commit the crime as the direct shooter. And insofar as the opportunity to commit the crime as an aider and abettor or a confederate, under Denny, the burden is on the defense to satisfy those three prongs, the direct connection, the motive, and the opportunity. And the state is not taking or asking this court to take a blanket rule approach like the South Carolina Supreme Court did and say, whenever you've got forensic evidence, you just don't get in any Denny evidence at all. And that also leads me to make another point about how this case is different from Holm, because here it's not the traditional Denny case where the jury never sees or hears anything about the third party. Here you had Willie Friend testifying. The jury was able to evaluate his demeanor. The jury was able to listen to defense counsel cross-examine him about, isn't it true that you lied to the police when you said that Eva hadn't gone into the after-hours club? And didn't you tell your mother before the prelim that you had to get your story straight? So, and also the defense was able to argue during closing without objection from the prosecutor that the state could have charged Willie Friend with this murder, and the defense argued that he had a motive, and the motive was supplied by the state's evidence that Willie told, excuse me if I could just finish my sentence.
Go Willie, ahead, counsel.
Thank you. Willie had told Carol Kidd Edwards Eva was pregnant, and he had just been to the courthouse on a paternity action, and the theory was he did not want to be charged in another one.
Your red light's on. I suggest you look at page 35 of the defendant's brief where they discuss Holmes and what they view as the test in Holmes on introducing evidence, so we can talk about that in 5 minutes. Thank you, Ms. Mueller. Ms. Kearney, representing General Grant Wilson.
May it please the Court. I appreciate the time before you today to tell the complete story of General Grant Wilson's defense, since that opportunity was denied him by the Circuit Court. At trial, the Circuit Court only permitted the sort of one-sided presentation that the United States Supreme Court in Holmes versus South Carolina found to be error, because it permitted evaluation of the strength of only one party's evidence. In Mr. Wilson's case as well, the jury, was wrongly denied the chance to evaluate the strength of evidence for both parties. Justice Gableman talked about the evidence with regard to Mary Lee Larson and Barbara Lang. That is one piece of Mr. Wilson's defense. His entire defense is that the identified third-party perpetrator on the scene at the shooting, at the time of the shooting itself, and we know this because of a neutral witness, that person, we couldn't talk about him at trial as being the third-party perpetrator. It's the narrative, Mr. Wilson's ability to give the theory of his defense. An important part of that was the fact that Mary Lee Larson and Barbara Lang, if Barbara Lang could have even given an offer of proof, would have talked about the verbal threats that came from Mr. Willie Friend to Eva Merich. And those threats happened 2 weeks before, as we've talked about. It goes to motive. It absolutely does. If this were a state case, if you look at State v. Simpson, and there's an accused, and there's a victim, and it's a homicide, threats, verbal threats within a reasonable time frame come in. This would have come in as a motive. It also would have showed that Eva Merich was herself recognizing the fact that Willie Friend wanted to keep her in check. She said, I know he would. He would kill me. You asked Justice Gableman, where is the connection that she wasn't in check? There was a whole host of other evidence that Friend...
This whole what?
A whole host of other evidence that did not come in having to do with a relationship, sort of a triangular relationship. Willie Friend, he had a brother, Larnell Jabo. And Jabo had a whole host of illegal activities to his name, including the After Hours Club that was there, and there were other pieces of things that he was involved in that involved Eva Merich. That's not before you. But suffice it to say, because that didn't come up on this particular question, there was also the possibility that Larnell Friend was also a third-party perpetrator here. And I say that it's possible because you heard a lot from the Assistant Attorney General about the fact that it was impossible for Mr. Willie Friend to be the shooter. Well, the fact of the matter is, under Holland v. State, what you're looking at is, was there participation? Was he the shooter? Was he an aider and abettor? Was he a conspirator? Did he bring his brothers into it? All of those pieces had to come into this particular formulation of Mr. Wilson's defense. But Mr. Wilson wasn't able to bring that defense in. And that is why it was only one-sided. The ballistics themselves only talk about a very small piece, the bullets that went were flying around that miraculously did not hit Welly Friend at all, despite the fact that there were bullets from .44 caliber, .25 caliber, and Welly Friend was right there. But the Denny test itself has three prongs: motive, direct connection, and opportunity. Obviously, direct connection, we've heard, is conceded. I thought motive was conceded as well. But there is enough there. If you look at the offer of proof, it shows that threat and then followed up by the slapping around of this marriage, which was even told to Detective Dubis, the fact that there was a slapping around among a whole host of people in a hotel. Those sorts of things show that there was a very contentious relationship between Willie Friend and Eva Marriage and give rise to concerns about how that domestic violence and that verbal threat would come through later on to Eva Marriage, who ultimately was shot while in the company of Willie Friend. So we have motive, I believe, and the motive itself is shown by that offer of proof. And it's only the plausibility that we're looking here, the reasonableness, because it's defense. We have direct connection.
Do you agree that physically Willie Friend could not have been the shooter?
Your Honor, I can't agree or disagree, frankly, because all the information didn't go in and it was before the jury.
How would he have shot her with a .44 caliber in her left shoulder when she was the driver and he was in the passenger seat, according to everything we know?
Well, what we know, Your Honor, is this. First of all, we know he was in that car for an awful long period of time, from his account, for 1 to 2 hours. I have no idea where they were seated at that time. One would think that they didn't sit in their seat for that whole 1 to 2 hours, just sitting there. It's his testimony, Willie Friend's testimony, as to what happened in that car. I would submit to Your Honor that his testimony may not be the most credible as to whether or not he was involved. With regard to the ballistics and the bullets, you're right. I mean, those bullets are there. And with regard to whether he shot Eva Merrick with a .44, what I do know is that the murder weapon was never there, was never found, and that we have a neutral witness placing him in the car, near the car, when those five shots from the larger caliber gun went off.
But he wasn't in the car, according to the same witness, when the shots were fired by the smaller caliber gun, right?
That's right. And we don't have, well, we know a couple of different things about that particular circumstance. We know that another car.
He could have been the shooter for the smaller caliber. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed that.
He could not have been the shooter of the smaller caliber weapon, according to what we know. Is that right? Or?
I do not believe that that was the, I do not believe that the evidence at trial showed that he was the shooter of the smaller caliber. What we know about that shooter comes from Carol Kidd Edwards, and what we know is that her description eliminates Mr. Wilson as the shooter of that smaller caliber gun. She says it's somebody who was 6 foot, slightly built. Mr. Wilson, not 6 foot, not slightly built. We have Willie Friend's testimony itself that talks about the fact that the shooter was left-handed. Mr. Wilson was able to bring in testimony with regard to the fact that he had served for 18 years with the Army Reserve. He brought in Army Reserve colleagues who talked about the fact that he shot right-handed. We also have Willie Friend talking about the fact that it was somebody with gold-rimmed glasses. Mr. Wilson was able to put in that sort of information that he did not wear gold-rimmed glasses.
That testimony about the gold-rimmed glasses and someone that was slim and 6 feet tall was in regard to the eyewitness seeing the person who shot the small caliber gun after the large caliber shooting had occurred. Is that correct, or am I mixed up?
No, you're absolutely right, Your Honor, and I apologize. I thought you were asking about that small caliber.
So I'm trying to figure it all out.
Well, there is sort of a vacuum about information about the larger caliber. All we know about the larger caliber is that Carol Kidd Edwards heard the larger caliber, was on the floor for most of those. She got up, and she saw Willie Friend by that car. And we have Willie Friend saying he was in the car. There is nothing to connect General Grant Wilson to that larger caliber shooting. There are no forensics. There are no prints. There's no blood. There's no fibers. Nothing like Holmes, where there was all that sort of thing. There is no forensics here. It's all circumstantial. It comes down to Willie Friend. The Court of Appeals said Willie Friend was the link that brought General Grant Wilson into this case. And that's who sent the detectives on Willie, on General Grant Wilson's tail.
Okay, Willie talked about identifying a shooter, and it had to be the shooter of the .44 caliber because he was already out of there, according to the eyewitness's testimony, before the smaller caliber weapon was fired, right? He was already running down the sidewalk.
That's not my impression, Your Honor, because my understanding is that Willie Friend, well, the testimony of the neutral witness, Carol Kidd Edwards, talked about how he was running sideways. And so I'm not prepared to say, based on the evidence that we saw at trial, that he couldn't see that shooter. And it wasn't clear, Your Honor, whether what he was talking about. He certainly saw that person come out of the passenger side of the car. And that's an important piece that Mr. Wilson didn't get to put in the framework of his defense, which is that he didn't do it and somebody else did, the third-party perpetrator there, Willie Friend. Two people probably involved because we have a person coming out of the passenger side of that car. And let me just, if I could say just for one moment about that car, that's an important piece that sort of goes to Willie Friend as well. He testified that it was General Grant Wilson's car. But we only know that because he said it was. We have testimony, again, from Carol Kidd Edwards eliminating General Grant Wilson's car because it had, according to her, a regular license plate. General Grant Wilson, having served for those 18 years in the Army Reserve, had special plates. And only Mr. Friend was able to say that it was Mr. Wilson's car. If I could turn to that idea of what the test should be, the factors. We heard from the Assistant Attorney General saying that it was the defense's contention that you could not separate out opportunity and direct connection. And I think, respectfully, that's not quite what we said. We said there are three factors. And I say factors because they work together. This is not like elements of a crime. This is factors where you look at evidence to see how the evidence affects all three situations. Motive we talked about, direct connection was conceded by time and place. Opportunity sounds like direct connection. I think that's hard to miss when you look at the Wisconsin cases. You see the words time and place, proximity, all over. Think about Volbrecht. The court was looking at whether or not Kim Brown was in the woods at the time of the shooting of Angela, I'm sorry, the killing of Angela Hackle. You think about the situation with Steve Avery, certainly a motive situation, but one where the court was looking to see whether or not evidence could be brought in that the third-party perpetrators possibly named by Avery were in the junkyard. That proximity piece is there in those cases. And obviously, for reasons that we've just discussed, it is the case that Mr. Wilson can say Willie Friend was there in time and place. Now, if Your Honors want to bring in this idea of plausibility or reasonableness into opportunity, we have that here, too, in Mr. Wilson's case, and you need look no further than Willie Friend's testimony. He is the one who said that he was in the After Hours Club with Eva Marriage for some time. Even though he didn't testify to that in the preliminary hearing, he lied about it. He said it at trial. Certainly, we know from Willie Friend's testimony, his brother, Larnell Friend, was there. Marshall Friend was there, too, his other brother. Certainly, there's opportunity to talk, to plan, to conspire, to hurt Eva Marriage. We know from Willie Friend's testimony he sat out there for 2 hours in a car with Eva Marriage. Plenty of time to delay her, to wait until that shooting happens. As for what else there could be brought in with regard to opportunity, we have the testimony with regard to the threats and domestic violence. That adds strength to what Willie Friend was doing, the opportunity, the reasons for what he did. And that's the sort of evidence that should have been allowed to come in, and the court, the circuit court, didn't allow it to come in.
Ms. Kearney, this crime, or I shouldn't say the crime, the conviction was as a result of a jury verdict in 1993.
That's right, Your Honor. This is his direct appeal, since Mr. Kovac, unfortunately, did not do a good job in a lot of ways.
And that's how many years ago? 21?
He's been in jail for now over 20 years.
And if the Court of Appeals decision is affirmed, then what happens?
Well, the Court of Appeals reversed and sent it back down to trial. And so it would be on the state's shoulders then to determine whether or not it would retry the case.
Which may be very difficult after 21 years. Some of these witnesses may be deceased. They may be gone. they may not remember as well as they did.
Your Honor, that's
other
absolutely
times.
Right.
And there's a high possibility, or if you prefer, probability, that the state cannot re-prosecute him.
Well, Your Honor, that would be the state's determination.
I understand that. But the result of that would be, assuming he's guilty, which we have a conviction from the jury, and your point is that the conviction is no good because he didn't get an opportunity to put in a defense. I mean, that's the theory of it.
That's exactly right.
But so we don't know. Maybe he is guilty. Maybe he is not. But it's not going to be a retrial, and you got somebody who has been convicted of first-degree intentional homicide, and one count of attempted first-degree intentional homicide, out on the street.
Well, Your Honor, a couple things on that.
Should that be a factor in this court's decision?
We don't believe it should, Your Honor. The opportunity here is a constitutional opportunity to put in a complete defense, a meaningful opportunity. Mr. Wilson has sat in jail now for 20 years through no fault of his own, frankly, through fault sometimes of some of his other counsel. He sat there without having the opportunity to tell his side of the story, to give in his defense. And, Your Honor, whether he goes out on the street or not shouldn't matter. We have a system here, and the system is if you're a defendant, you have the opportunity to put in your defense according to the rules that we have in place. The rule we have here is Denny. Denny sets a reasonable limit on the evidence that could come in. What the state wants, what should have been shown for opportunity according to the state, would put such an unreasonable burden that it is wrong. And what's more, Wilson could have shown these things if the court would have let him. The court stopped. It's not that Mr. Kovac didn't try. Mr. Kovac tried to put in jury instructions that were not allowed. Theory of defense jury instructions. It wasn't just one piece of evidence having to do with threats and verbal threats and violence. That's just one piece of this. He did not mount a defense that allowed him to give the best story, that the person sitting there in court, the person sitting there at the scene was responsible. It should not be on Mr. Wilson's shoulders to bear the burden of having to deal with a court that did not allow him to put in his defense that he has a right to do. And after, if I might say, the court and the state has the ability to go out and to reformulate its case. There's a transcript still. There are photos that the police have still. They may not have the exhibits, but that, frankly, is the fault of the state. They knew Mr. Wilson's appeal rights were reinstated in 2010, and they destroyed all the evidence they destroyed the exhibits in 2011. So, frankly, some of that fault has to rely on the shoulders of the state if there's a problem later. What I do know is this. Mr. Wilson has served 20 years, and he deserved better at his trial. It was harmful error, if I can move to that. It was harmful error in this case. If I look at all the factors, if we look at all the factors, however you want to formulate what harmful error is, those factors show that this was a meaningful problem in the case. First factor is the frequency of the error. This infected the entire trial. Not a possibility to argue it at the openings. Could not talk to Willie Friend about his suspicious behavior, the unusual behavior. Why did he run from the car, not try to help Miss Marriage? Why did he go to the illegal after hours even to begin with? Why was he out for 2 hours? What was he doing dealing with his brothers? All of those questions. Why was he not hit by bullets when supposedly Mr. Wilson was the shooter and he is an expert marksman? All the things we see in the Court of Appeals decision. The importance, we're talking to you about a fundamental situation here, his story about what happened. Was there duplicative evidence here? This is not a duplicative evidence case like Nelson that you recently decided last term. No, this is evidence that did not get to the jury at all. We hear about the fact that in the closing argument, counsel was able to say Willie Friend might have been a suspect. Well, that was not testimony. That was the talk of an attorney. I guess much like the talk I'm giving you today. But the fact of the matter is that needs to be supported by something. It needs to be a framework where all the pieces of evidence at trial come in. That's what a good trial lawyer does. Give the story, the narrative to the jury. That didn't happen here. There was no duplication because that was not part of it.
But I ask you a question. As I understand, I'm trying to understand your theory of the defense here. friend was in the vehicle with the deceased.
Correct.
There's a car with two other people in it.
That's right.
All right. What did you have to show anything about the fact that three people participated in a homicide?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I mean, I think what third-party perpetrator rules show, or the factors that we talk about in Denny, when we talk about direct connection and we talk about opportunity, I think that immediately flows into what a state would have to show, but at a lesser burden, which is participation somehow. So just like in a regular crime, the state may choose just to prosecute one person who's a conspirator, one person who is an aider and abettor. Here, all we needed to do and all we did or tried to do was bring in Willie Friend's role. Why? Because he was at the scene. He was easy to do. We could have talked about other people. We tried to talk about his brother, Larnell Friend. It is true, Your Honor. There's a blank. Who was that shooter? But that's just the point. The jury should have been able to think about that. And all they got to think about was that Mr. Wilson was brought into the case by Willie Friend.
Well, the state says that's just speculation. You've got nothing to show that Friend directly or indirectly, conspirator or aider or abettor, did or was the actual perpetrator. And then it's just speculation, and that's all that you're bringing in.
That is absolutely the case, and respectfully, we disagree with that. We disagree with that because I do believe that being physically present matters, and we definitely have that. And I do believe that the threats and the acts of domestic violence themselves speak to that relationship as being a very rocky one where there's trouble. And were we able to bring in information about the other brothers and the activities they were involved in?
But, Counselor, you haven't identified the other brothers as being the two people in the car. You haven't identified who those people are or that they weren't connected to Wilson, or maybe Wilson was one of the two. I mean, I don't see how you bring together somebody else did it at Friend's request without connecting Friend to the people in the car that are ID'd by the woman upstairs. At least one of them she saw and described. Don't you have to make a connection between Friend and those guys if you're going to say, you know, Friend was part of a third-party cabal to kill Ava?
Well, if it was a larger conspiracy, respectfully, no. But we still – but even putting that aside, perhaps that's not your view of it. And let me say that there is evidence to show that there is a link between all those people. And here's the evidence. He's there for a long period of time. He waits until the shooter comes. He's sitting there by the car. He is not shot at. I'm sorry. Let me take it back. He's shot at, but he's not hit. There are all these bullets flying everywhere. Somehow he's able to escape without a scratch, without a hurt. How can that happen, frankly, if these are marksmen or somebody with this barrage of bullets is fighting? There has to be. There's a question there about Willie Friend and his connection. Why did he wait for 1 to 2 hours outside? And should Mr. Kovac, as counsel for Mr. Wilson, been able to pursue that more?
That was his girlfriend. Wasn't Ava his girlfriend? Weren't they involved in a romantic relationship? And to sit in the car with your boyfriend for 2 hours, to me, doesn't seem extraordinary, counsel.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, particularly since they were sitting outside a darkened illegal after-hours club. Well, maybe not darkened, but certainly a legal after-hours club, and they had been in that club before. The point here is that we're talking about plausibility. We don't have the state's burden of showing beyond a reasonable doubt that Willie Friend was the shooter. We have to show that he was participating in a plausible, reasonable way, if you regard opportunity as requiring that. If Mr. Wilson here, if the evidence here does not show Denny, frankly, it is hard to imagine a case where Denny would be satisfied.
Counsel, maybe we can back up a little bit. Tell me exactly what it is that you would have introduced, but you weren't allowed to introduce counsel, defense counsel. Who's the witness? What would they say? And how do you tie that up? And then, secondarily, is there any limit to Denny evidence, ever? I mean, can you have trial within trial within trial within trial within trial to get Denny evidence in?
Well, to answer the last first, I hope that we can have trial within trial within trial, because I think that would be not the burden that a defendant should have to have.
Well, I should. Carol Kraft, the prosecutor, mentioned that if you went down this path, there would be a voluminous testimony that she would have to introduce to explain the circumstances surrounding these people knowing each other and who was doing what, and, you know, it kind of does become a trial within a trial. So that's part of that question for me. As a practical matter, any evidence when it's just neat and it's there and this witness who's going to testify to this and it's all buttoned up and done, that's easy. But this is more than that, I think. But if it's not, explain that to me as well. Who is missing? What would they say? And how would this case be tried if you were allowed to introduce this testimony? Other than speculation, you know, speculative questioning, that sort of thing.
Well, I think with regard to Ms. Kraft, frankly, I think she was worried about the expediency of it. She wanted to get the case done, and I think, you know, that was a disservice to Mr. Wilson. In this case of a defense, there always has to be the leeway to give the defendant the ability to tell his story. Does it have to be in the leeway to the remote speculation?
Well, no. Was he precluded from testifying if he wanted to tell his story? I'm asking you, how does he get his story in without... What was missing? Who would he have called, and what questions couldn't he ask that he would have otherwise asked?
Well, I think we started from hearing from the assistant exactly who couldn't testify, and I think the office of proof to begin with start that Mary Lee Larson could not testify. She was a good friend of Eva Marich. She had been a friend since junior high. She knew about the relationship between Willie Friend and Eva Marich. She, in her kitchen, heard Willie Friend tell Eva Marich, tell everyone, frankly, that if Eva wouldn't give the check, he would kill her, and Eva Marich said, yes, he would.
So the jury went thinking that this was a great relationship, it wasn't rocky, there weren't any problems, and he never made any threats.
Well, I
the
sort
jury
of
didn't hear anything regarding
that. Whether they thought it was rocky, I don't know, but they certainly didn't hear that it had disintegrated to the point of that sort of threat 2 weeks before Eva Marich's shooting. And then you see that, and then Barbara Lang couldn't even testify, and she was there. She didn't even give an offer of proof. She would have talked about that. Then you have on the heels of that this incident where Willie Friend was slapping around Eva Marich in front of a whole host of people in a hotel called the Edge of Town, which frankly is a prostitution hotel. And so you see the situation that doesn't come in, but we see from the police reports that Eva Marich was involved in prostitution. And her pimp was the Larnell Friend. And you have these situations. None of that was able to come in, that there was that circumstance here. And you couldn't talk about that as direct evidence. There was no ability to test the credibility of Willie Friend. Because of that, he was the link. And so the strength of the state's testimony was not tested.
The Larson, Lang, and who would testify about the slapping and the prostitution and the pimp? And
well, Barbara Lang would have testified in addition to Mary Lee Larson about the slapping. And frankly, you know, we had Detective Dubas, who was told all of that, who would have gotten on the stand and would have been able to say that they told him about the slapping and the fact that they thought when Eva Marich was killed that it was Willie Friend, not General Grant Wilson.
You mean they investigated Friend?
No, I'm sorry. I put two things together. No, Mary Lee Larson and Barbara Lang, the friends of Eva Marich, would have said that it was the case, that they thought it was Willie Friend, not Wilson, who committed the shooting.
So you think their testimony would have come in that they believe Friend was the perpetrator?
Yes. And there were also, just to go just a few more seconds
what
on...
What would that testimony have been based on?
Direct observations of the relationship between Willie Friend and Eva Marich and what she had told them over time. And, you know, you can ask me whether it could have come in, but the fact is she was dead at that point, and there's a whole host of evidentiary things that didn't get even resolved. It should have gone to the jury. If I could just go to Detective Dubas.
To ask you, if I hear you correctly, the test for whether the trial court should have allowed this evidence is whether there's and it's plausible that there was a third party perpetrator, that you don't have to bring in evidence, you the defendant don't have to bring in evidence or make an offer of proof that beyond a reasonable doubt or even preponderance of the evidence is that there was a third-party perpetrator. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that any defense is a preponderance. And so I'm arguing that the overarching requirement is that there's a preponderance to show that defense. But with regard to the prong of Denny itself, If it's not the case that opportunity is just time and place, if it is the case that you view your cases as saying there has to be something more, I would suggest it would be something like plausibility or reasonableness. And that's Denny itself. It talks about how there's a desire to have a reasonable limit on this evidence. If I could go back just, yes.
What limitations, if any, did the court put on cross-examination of Willie Friend?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you say that one more time?
What limitations, if any, did the court put on the cross-examination of Willie Friend?
Right before Willie Friend testified, the court took up the issue that Mr. Kovac brought up, which was whether Willie Friend was a third-party perpetrator. And the court basically did make a decision. And so as to whether or not that was going to be a defense allowed in, and in doing that, the court did not allow Mr. Kovac to ask him all the sorts of questions one would about his participation. Why were you there? Why were you outside? Was it just a romantic relationship? Was there something more? Why did you have to spend 2 hours outside after having been in the After Hours Club? What was going on? Did you talk to your brothers while you were in the After Hours Club? Were they upset with Eva Marriage because she wanted to get out of the prostitution business? All of those questions couldn't come up. Frankly, that was not even an offer of proof. None of that stuff could come up because the judge did not think that Denny, as a court of appeals case, should be followed. There is a problem. When you get to the next folks, the detectives, Detective Dubis, there is evidence in the record that a note was sent to the lab with the bullets saying, see if you can eliminate Willie Friend as a suspect here by looking at this forensics. Why was that sent? Why were they trying to eliminate Willie Friend as a suspect? Why did the detective who went to talk to Larnell Friend at the After Hours Club, why was it a detective known to Larnell Friend? Why wasn't the other detectives it was a special person that went to talk to him. Why was that? All of those questions couldn't be asked.
The judge precluded that questioning. Counsel tried, and there was an objection, and it was sustained.
With regard to whether or not those questions as to why Detective Dubis had special people go, that sort of thing.
And the questioning of Friend.
The counsel asked the court whether or not Willie Friend could be considered a third-party perpetrator, whether or not evidence about that could come in, and the court refused, if I could finish, the court refused to allow that defense at that time and, frankly, throughout the whole trial.
Okay, why people would be sitting in a place and what they were doing is relevant. I mean, he tried to ask those questions and he wasn't. What could he ask Friend?
Well, he could have asked Friend a whole host of things. I mean, Friend's behavior was awfully suspicious. And so he could have asked Friend, why was he there? Why did he escape? None of those questions were asked. Now, I will tell you that Kovac was not the best lawyer, but it is in the record all over the place that he and the judge were at odds about whether or not Willie Friend as a suspect could be talked about. And it happened before Friend's testimony. It happened throughout the trial. It happened a lot towards the end of the defendant's case, where there was the desire to put in the defendant's narrative. So I will, in answer to your question, there was not a single question where there was objection, 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 upheld, upheld, upheld. It was more the idea, Your Honor, that at the time preceding the witness's testimony, there was an exploration of what could be talked about. And counsel said, I want to talk about the fact that he's a suspect, and the court did not.
What was his defense? Put the state to its burden of proof. I have an alibi. Both.
That was what Mr. Wilson put in. He put in the fact he testified. He put in the fact that he was asleep. He put in the fact that if you look at the details from the neutral witness, I didn't match them. He put in the fact that, you know, this car that was on the scene didn't have my license plate. But what was missing was the question I suspect was in the jury's mind. Okay, it wasn't you. Who was it? What was going on? And that Mr. Wilson didn't get to answer. Thank you, Your Honors. We ask that the Court of Appeals decision be affirmed.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Moeller.
Before I forget, I want to make sure I answer the question the Chief Justice posed during my initial presentation, and that is, what is my response to the statement on page 35 of Wilson's brief, where they're quoting from the Holmes decision, mm-hmm. By evaluating the strength of only one party's evidence, no logical conclusion can be reached regarding the strength of contrary evidence offered by the other side to rebut or cast doubt. Our response is that We are not evaluating just the state's evidence, as was done by the South Carolina Supreme Court in Holmes, and saying that, oh, because our evidence was so strong, you don't get to put in any third-party perpetrator evidence. We're saying that you've never pointed to any evidence showing support for the theory that Willie Friend somehow had two unknown gunmen come up while he had Eva Merrick in the car, and that these two unknown gunmen somehow had access to the same type of car that General Grant Wilson was admittedly driving on the same roads and near the same locations as Willie Friend and Eva Merrick shortly before she was murdered. So we're saying, we're looking at their evidence, and all it is speculation. And
okay, but look, you agree, I think, that the defendant doesn't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was a third party.
Of course not. Does not have to prove that.
So where does plausibility / preponderance of evidence / reasonableness / and speculation, what's the cutting line between those? Or just take any of the first three and speculation? I mean, well, you say it's speculation, I say it's a sure thing.
I think if you look at Denny, you look at the test, it has to be, when you look at those three factors, do they in concert show a legitimate tendency that this person was responsible for the crime with which the defendant was charged? And I don't see anything in this record that shows any kind of legitimate tendency to show Willie Friend's involvement, either as a shooter or as somebody who set up the victim so that she could be shot by two other people. And something I feel compelled to point out is that it's very difficult to sanitize the evidence that related to Willie Friend from the evidence that the defense wanted to present with regard to Larnell Friend, his brother. At trial, there was an effort made by Mr. Kovac to question Willie Friend about the fact that wasn't your brother the pimp for Eva Merrick? The problem was that the only thing they were relying on, and I think you'd have to go back to the briefs that were filed in the Court of Appeals, specifically the appendix to Mr. Wilson's brief, was a police report that recounted statements made by both Clara Merrick and Deja Merrick, who were the sister and the mother of the victim. And they talked about how Eva Merrick had been in prostitution years ago, and that she had somehow, the mother told the police that she had somehow gotten away from Larnell Friend. She doesn't know how, but she was no longer a prostitute. So their whole theory of how Larnell Friend killed her because she wanted to get out of the prostitution business and he didn't want her to get out, so therefore he killed her, was never really linked. And I know that this is not before this court right now, but it's very hard to sanitize the evidence relating to Willie Friend from the evidence relating to his brother, because Mr. Kovac wanted to show both of them as possible third-party perpetrators, and the state's position was that the weakness with regard to the other brother was there was no showing that he had been seen right at the scene of the crime, and the whole thing about this motive for prostitution went back years, so it was no longer relevant.
Counsel, do you agree or disagree with your opposing counsel's assertion made several times today and throughout the briefs that if the state sought to introduce the evidence in regard to the slapping incident and the statement about keeping in check, that would, without question, be admitted into evidence?
If it were done by Mr. Wilson and we were trying to show that he had done the same
yes.
thing? I would say most likely she is correct that it would come in because it would be a discretionary call on the part of the trial court. And you're pointing out acts of violence by the defendant against the victim of the charged crime within a short time frame, I think that there are cases in which that type of evidence has been admitted
as other acts evidence?
As other acts evidence. So there'd be also a limiting instruction.
Other acts evidence to show
motive.
Or plan.
Or
intent.
Well, it depends on,
I guess it depends on your point of view, doesn't it?
Right. But I think it would be a discretionary call. When you're talking 2 weeks before the crime, I think it's more likely that a trial court would let it in as not being remote. Thank you.
Justice Prosser.
As I understand your theory, there were two shooters in this case, one of whom was General Grant Wilson.
No, there was one shooter. Theory is that there was one shooter, General Grant Wilson, that he approached the car originally with the .44 Magnum revolver, fired two shots into Eva Merrick. The exhibit showed the glass on the driver's side door had been shattered. Another shot went into the passenger seat on the front side. That was corroborated by the ballistics showing that there were copper jacketings. It was Exhibit 16 taken out of the door. That was a third shot. And then three other shots, all from a .44 caliber gun, were found in the area along the sidewalk, the dirt, in the area where Friend said he had run away from the scene. So we were counted for six bullets from a .44. Then Wilson, in our theory, went back to the car, over to the passenger side, and got a second gun, and that was a .22, .25 caliber weapon, and then shot 5 to 7 rounds into the victim. And those casings were found in the back seat and the floor of the car. So it was all one person, two guns.
There was never another person?
No.
That's the state's theory.
Right.
Was the car parked so that the passenger side door was against the sidewalk or the driver's side door against the sidewalk?
My understanding was that the car that the victim was in had the passenger side by the curb sidewalk.
Okay.
And that Wilson's car was headed in the opposite direction so that the driver's side of the gold Lincoln was facing the driver's side, maybe not right next to it, but on the same side as the driver's side of Merrick's car.
Now, was the victim pregnant?
No. Pardon? No, she was not pregnant. The medical testimony was that she was not. Carol Kidd Edwards testified that she thought the victim was pregnant and that she had asked Willie Friend afterwards, and he confirmed that she was. We don't know why this is, but medically the testimony of Dr. Jensen was that, no, she was not pregnant.
And the father,
The
father of the fetus was?
Well, she wasn't pregnant, so there
was. No, but if she were, and he thought she was pregnant, did he think he was the father, or is that not clear?
Well, if he thought he was, that was the motive that Mr.
That's
Kovac
right. Okay.
cited during closing.
Right.
Because
and
he was the boyfriend.
The jury never heard any of this.
No, the jury did hear this.
What did the jury hear?
The jury knew that Carol Kidd Edwards thought Eva was pregnant, that Willie Friend had confirmed that she was pregnant, and then in closing argument...
Okay, it was an argument, but not in evidence.
Well, the evidence came from the state's witnesses, actually.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me about that. I want to, on behalf of the court, thank both counsel for their argument on the Denny case and its application to these fact situations. And... so ends the oral argument on 11AP1803CR, State versus General Grant Wilson. The court will meet in the conference room in a half hour, and I think that's 3:15, if I'm reading that clock right. And the court will then reconvene for oral argument next week as scheduled. We are in recess.